It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Testimony has ended in the trial of Ed O'Bannon versus the NCAA. The case involves a challenge to the NCAA's rules restricting college athletes from profiting from their names and likenesses. Pittsburgh Post-Gazette sports reporter Brady McCullough has been covering the trial and joins me now in Studio A. Brady McCullough, welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks. I'm glad to be here, Paul.
For our listeners who haven't been following the case, explain who Ed O'Bannon is and why he is suing the NCAA. Just an overall look at the genesis of this case.
Ed O'Bannon was the star of the 1995 UCLA Bruins National Championship basketball team. He had a little bit of a run in the NBA, was a first-round draft pick, but he played 4 years at UCLA. His career just never quite happened for him in the NBA between injuries and you know, some people just don't have it like they did in college. He ends up selling cars in Las Vegas and is, you know, happy with that life and an every man. And he goes to a friend's house one day, and his friend's son is playing a March Madness video game. And this is about 2007. And they point out to him, Ed, this is you on the video game, is it not? And this is Ed O'Bannon. He wears number 31. He shoots left-handed. Other things about him, his height, weight, everything is the same. So Ed O'Bannon starts wondering, wait, how are they able to use my image and number and my personality in a video game all these years later on this classic team, and I don't ever get anything out of it? And so then Ed O'Bannon ends up reconnecting with an old friend, a Pittsburgh guy by the name of Sonny Vaccaro, who's one of the big business people in college basketball through his working at Nike, Reebok, Adidas, signing some of the biggest names to shoe contracts. Sonny and Ed start talking. Sonny's been against the NCAA for a long time, and what he viewed as the hypocrisy of which they run their operation. And they start talking about this idea of names, images, and likenesses. And Sonny Vaccaro, it was more the ESPN classic, the fact that these guys, the rebroadcasts of old games that these guys were a part of, are able to be used over and over again without the players who played in them ever seeing any money. That was the genesis of it. And by 2009, they sued the NCAA. Ed sued the NCAA with guidance from Sonny and then the attorneys that signed on.
And there's been a traditional rule with regard to the NCAA, and we're starting to see some holes poked in that rule with payment for players. There's now some consideration being given to compensating the players monetarily in some way. But when we talk about the names and likenesses of players being used, we're not just talking about a stipend here. We're talking about big bucks, which the NCAA is an organization that is profiting, just like the members of it are profiting. So why is it, Brady, that the NCAA is fighting this? Why do they not want to give the athletes a piece of the economic pie here?
Well, I mean, that's they obviously want to keep as much of that as they can for themselves and for this model that they're desperately trying to protect, this amateur model, this collegiate model that they discussed for 3 weeks in Oakland.
But they're saying it goes beyond just, and clearly there's a benefit to, more money is better than less money. So we get that part of it. But there's also this idea that you heard coming out in the NCAA's argument about this being the idea of handing over profits to players is detrimental to the purity and the sanctity of the amateur athletics at the college level, that it would somehow corrupt that. How are they arguing this?
They're arguing that exact point, that this idea of the integration of academics and athletics, and this idea that the college football player at Stanford is just as much a part of the university community as the theater major. And they're loving this idea, this as you say, this pure idea. And it was interesting over 3 weeks to hear. And they also are arguing that they think that the college sports fan will not be as interested if the players are paid. That people want and like the idea that these guys are amateurs who play for, as they say in their own rule book, that the sport is an avocation. It is something they do as a hobby. And the plaintiffs' attorneys over and over again showed, you know, had between anecdotal, you know, discussions with the athletes that were on the stand, and then also just showing numbers of hours that these guys are spending. They're trying to say there is no such thing at this level of high level college football and college basketball as a student athlete. That is a term that was created by the NCAA to avoid workers' comp issues in the 1950s. These are athlete students. These are guys who are spending 40 hours a week on their sport, and making that point that this idea that they are just like every other student is was a big bone of contention between each side.
We're talking with Brady McCullough. He is a sports writer for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and he spent 3 weeks recently in Oakland, California, covering each day of the Ed O'Bannon versus the NCAA trial. Was there a particular part of the testimony that really stuck with you in terms of how one side or the other was able to make their case, or how one side, say the plaintiff side, was really able to poke a hole in the NCAA's argument and logic?
Yeah, you know, one of the key moments for me in the trial was the end of the second week. They had the Big Ten commissioner, Jim Delaney, up. This was the NCAA's witness. And Jim Delaney played college basketball for Dean Smith in North Carolina, was a captain there in the 1960s. There are not many true believers in college sports and the amateur model like Jim Delaney. Jim Delaney is also on the other side of this, you know, created the Big Ten Network, which brings in hundreds of millions of dollars each year and gets spread out to these schools. Each school's getting upwards of $20 million a year from this Big Ten Network contract. So he's also known and realized how much he can monetize this college athletic experience better than just about anybody. And Jim Delaney's up there as a witness for the NCAA and kind of ends up playing into the plaintiff's hands by talking about how his own theories of reform. Everybody's up there acknowledging Mark Emmert, the president, Jim Delaney, that, oh, we've got all these reforms we want to do. We do care about the student athletes. We do want to do more for them. Here, you know, and he gets kind of ranting about how he thinks that college players in college football and college basketball need to be more like normal students, that they need opportunities to have internships, to study abroad, and starts talking about how he wants there to be dead periods when they're not in season for these athletes, that they can't go to the gym, for instance, your college basketball player, for these number of months so that you can actually pursue your educational aspirations. And so the fact that he's making this argument and is admitting under oath that there's too much, that it's too much now, too much emphasis on athletics, ends up, while he's up there trying to talk about reform, he ends up kind of making the point that the plaintiffs want to make, which is these guys are not students first, they're athletes first, and that's why this whole idea that they're amateurs and that they're not – that they're a part of the university community is a sham.
This is a bench trial. There is no jury, and the judge in this case her name is Claudia Ann Wilkin. And you said it is clear from some of the questions she's asking or clarification about terminology that she is not a sports fan. Do you see that helping or hurting the plaintiffs here?
I think it helps them. For one, this particular court that they filed this case in the U.S. District Court in Oakland, is normally known as being pretty friendly to plaintiffs in these sort of suits, these antitrust class action type suits. And so that's one aspect of it that is good for them. But also, Claudia Ann Wilkin not being a sports fan means that she doesn't have any care in her heart about some amateur model. You know, there's no – in fact, before the trial even started and some of the lead up to it, she said the word amateurism isn't going to do a lot of good for you here. You know, and she I think that she's not going to be swayed by this idea of, oh, I've been cheering for this team for a long time and I really like the idea that the guys are just normal students. She's going to be looking at it from a strictly antitrust perspective. And I do think a lot of the evidence that came out and the way it was explained in court makes it pretty clear that the NCAA does function like a cartel and has conspired with its partners to set the price of labor in this case at $0.
And we're just down to a few seconds here, but when will we see the verdict in this case?
We don't know. It's up to her discretion, but the feeling we had was that it would be, you know, early August, sometime in that range.
And one other quick question. Does this change will there be a new world of college sports after this verdict is rendered?
Absolutely, there will be. If the plaintiffs win and they get through appeals and all those things, that there will be a major change in how – funds are allocated in college sports.
Pittsburgh Post-Gazette sports reporter Brady McCullough joining us. Great thanks to you. And thanks for listening to Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, back again tomorrow. So long for now.